Tom, aka Hot Dub Time Machine, thank you for chatting to us on Kingdom FM. How are you?
No worries, I'm really good. Happy to be here.
So we are chatting to you on Zoom in Sydney. Are you in Sydney?
Yeah, I'm at my home, Sydney, Australia. It's 8 o'clock at night, my daughter is getting ready for bed, but it's morning for you guys.
Yes, it is. It is.
And I got to say, for Sydney, it's bloody cold over here. I mean,
oh, really?
Where is it? This for us anyway. It's like 8 degrees. I mean, are you having summer over there yet?
Yeah, it's not bad actually. We've got what, 16?
Whenever I walk in the kids to school and it's like raining and it's cold. I know Sydney cold is not Edinburgh cold. However, I do. It does warm me up a little bit to think that that must mean that you guys are doing a little bit better.
You are preparing yourself then, in a way, for coming to Edinburgh. So you're going to be back at the Fringe. The Fringe is back. You're back. This is great news.
I think so. I'm stoked. Like, I've been going to Edinburgh. This is the 10th anniversary. So started in 2012 and only really missed the 2 years because of COVID. Otherwise, I would be back there, and I want to keep coming back to Edinburgh for the rest of my life, really. I just love the Fringe, and I love the city, and I love the country. I love everything about it.
So 10 years you've been coming here. So Hot Dub has really grown from the beginning. What has that journey been like for you?
Yeah, it's been awesome. And it's actually even more than 10 years. My wife was in the Fringe the year before I started. So in 2011, she was in a show called Princess Cabaret. So I came over to support her. The year before that, I came over just to check out my friends who are in a band called Axis of Awesome. That's why I started Hot Dub Time Machine, was because I love the Fringe so much. I wanted to make a show that I could be in it. But to answer your question, it's been amazing. So I always wanted it to be my job. I could only ever dream of that. At the time, we were flat broke in those early years, and I had to borrow money from my parents to finance it. But now it's my job and things are great.
Wow. Axis of Awesome. Awesome. That actually answers my other question, which was, how did you start Hot Dub? What was the concept? But you're saying that it was because of the Fringe, was it?
Well, very much so. I've been DJing for a long time, but it was just really my hobby. I used to work in TV, actually. I did sound for TV. I found a little niche DJing at comedy shows. I found they were the only gigs that would have me because I was a bit of a weird DJ. And so I started DJing comedy gigs, and through that I started getting gigs at the Melbourne Comedy Festival and Adelaide Fringe. Then I discovered that the Edinburgh Fringe existed as well. I went over and visited it, and just, yeah. And it was very much a thing that I wanted to, because there weren't many DJs making shows. There was silent discos. There was, there was a place, a thing called Guilty Pleasures, that was quite big at the time. Things like that. There were late nights, but there was no one who was, trying to make a show. And it's not something that DJs are generally good at. Generally, DJs turn up and they plug in their gear and they play for 2 hours and they hand over to the next DJ. But it's not. I wanted to make a show that when you walk in, you buy a ticket and you make a show. So that's and then the time traveling framework kind of really came around that.
Oh, that's absolutely fascinating. I mean, it is very much a show. For those who've never been before, it's very much a show. And it's unique in that, just as you say, DJs, they'll maybe do a bit of a point now and again, but generally hide in a dark corner, the lights do it for them. But yeah, you are out there in front of the decks, you're getting dancers up, you're getting the crowd to sing along, you're dancing about. I mean, you're very much a performer as well as a DJ. And then you've got the technical requirements of the sound, the visuals. Wow, that's a lot to take on, but you just seem to be vibing.
I do think in terms of a show, like, I kind of mean, you got to perform, but there's a long history of DJs performing. Some of my favorite DJs are the guy called David Rodigan, who's an English reggae DJ who I consider a huge influence. He did DJ battling in that kind of reggae sound system culture is a real thing, real performance. It's not all nerdy techno things and stuff. However, I think, like, in terms of a show, like, I've performed in tents with circus people and I perform in tents with comedians and things like that. A show to me has a beginning, a middle and an end, and it has a progression and it has a big introduction that gets you involved and all that kind of stuff. And it has a journey and it has a story. And that's kind of what I mean by a show. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is that. But I also think it is a show as well. Like, it is. I went along to, I don't know if it was the one 2019 or 2018, the Liquid Rooms in Edinburgh at the Fringe. and it was amazing. The atmosphere is electric. The fire alarm went off, I think, in about the first 10 minutes, and we all had to go out in the street. Do you remember that?
I do.
But we all waited.
Yeah, good old liquid rooms. That was 2018. And it was, I actually had grand plans. I always have grand plans because I'm always trying to raise the ante in Edinburgh. And the year before that, 2017, we'd done the Highland Centre. And then 2018, we were going to do St. Stephen's Church over in Stockbridge. Mm-hmm. And I remember that we were working with a local promoter and he was very excited about it. And I was like, seems like there's a lot of neighbours around this church. Is this really going to be a thing? And sure enough, it didn't happen. And we had like 3 days notice to find another venue and Liquid Rooms, which is actually, I feel like I've played every room in Edinburgh and I know Liquid Rooms is iconic. So we got to do that. And yes, I do remember the fire alarm going off. It's not the first time. It seems to always bloody happen, especially in Scotland.
Yeah.
That at some point during the set, I used to do so many freshers gigs where, halfway through the set, they discovered that they hadn't isolated the smoke alarms and the 17-year-old is in charge of the pyro was, looking
You're
embarrassed
absolutely
right. as the sprinklers are turned on. Yeah.
When I did my first gig back after the lockdown, and obviously, you're super excited. Everybody's piling in. That's absolutely brilliant. Oh, I went a little bit keen on the smoke alarms, I think, but they'd also left a door open to one of them. And we were in for maybe 20 minutes. I was live videoing to Instagram. I'm like, this is brilliant. Blah. And then we were all outside on the street. First gig
it
back after.
I remember a Gilded Balloon, which was my first year. So 2012, I was in the nightclub of TV at the downstairs bit there. And we'd get a fire alarm all the time. But it's always a bit of fun, though. Everyone goes out onto the road, you're standing around, having some selfies. Everyone starts singing, a couple of, Seven Nation Army or something.
And, yeah. Fire engine turns up, people go, whoa!
Exactly. It's a bit of chaos. And it's not something that happens elsewhere in the world. I don't think I've ever had a fire alarm at a gig in Australia. It's something to do with the systems in the UK.
We need to sort them out here. How do you find the Scottish crowds? They're renowned worldwide.
Oh, obviously, I absolutely love it because of the relationship that I have with some people there. Like there's a guy there, Adam Bennett, who's the record holder for most. He's seen me like 34 times or something. Like it's extraordinary. And there are some people there that are just so passionate about Hot Tub Time Machine and about what I do. And I think it's because I only really generally come over once a year, maybe twice. It just has that excitement. And Scottish crowds, I find it endlessly interesting. I do think that, there's a difference between the Edinburgh crowd and the Glasgow crowd. There's a difference between the Aberdeen crowd and like even further north. I think it's all different and great.
Good
And Scotland, there is that warmth from Scotland. Like English people sing a lot. Scotland people, you get the singing as well, but you also just get this kind of just warmth that I really love.
Yes, Scotland. That's what we want to hear. You're back for your 10th year this year, and you've just had to add an extra date. So it's going to be at the Royal Highland Centre again. So Saturday, the 20th of August, is sold out. You've added on the 19th of August now, the Friday. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Is this going to be the biggest gig you've done in Scotland? And not the biggest gig you've done, but the biggest gig you've done then at the Fringe?
Well, we actually did the Highland Centre in 2017. And that was big up because frankly there were too many people in there. It was absolutely wild.
Smoke alarm, fire alarm
was off. It was just, oh my God, it was out of control. So this time we're taking a more measured approach to it and having I'm no longer back then I was very determined to be have the biggest show in Fringe history, or that's what we called it. And but no, this time I just want to make sure that everyone has a good time, which is why we've said that why the Saturday night is sold out and we're opening up the Friday, because we want there to be enough room for dancing and things like that. But I mean, they are just huge shows. It just shows what a great party the Fringe is.
Can I have a quick question about your tech that you use?
Of course.
Get a bit geeky. So you use Timecode Vinyl decks, I presume, or is it Serato Traktor? But then I saw
I'm a Serato guy, absolutely.
Yeah, Serato guy. Right, okay.
Serato, a great New Zealand company. It's like it's a thing, for people who don't know, there was a, carrying records around was incredibly boring and heavy. And it was a little company in New Zealand that invented this technology where you could play MP3s from time-coded vinyl, and which is meant everyone could use a laptop when they DJ. And the company's name is Serato. But then in about 2010, they also came up with a plugin that allowed you to play video and from as well. So instead of just loading an MP3, you could load a video file. And that's the bit that I really adopted and kind of is the heart of what I do. So I'm DJing with videos from the records. And it's technology that's available to every DJ, really. It's only like $100 extra for this plugin, but it just takes so much work to make a video for every song that you play. So
that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. You are, while you're mixing up there and cutting between your songs, you are also mixing the videos that you've already, prepared. And is that you doing that, or do you have people to do that for you behind the scenes, like prepared weeks in advance? Or?
Yes, no, so it's a whole, it is very much me. So as I say, I used to work in TV and specifically post-production. So I used to sit in a studio and just, I was a sound, so I would edit the sound design for TV shows and you just get a really good work ethic of sitting there for 10 hours a day, just cutting and working on art, really, such as the commercial TV shows I've worked on, my art and such, the hot tub is art, but you really try to make things good. And so, yes, that's what I do, is just sit at my computer and cut the files. Because everything is so synced at Hot Dub Time Machine, it's not something that you see very often at a gig, that everything is absolutely locked. And often when you see a DJ, you don't really know what they're doing. Like, they can be pressing a bunch of buttons and you might hear something and you might, are they actually doing that, or is that a thing? But at Hot Dub, if you see my hand move on the record, you can see the visuals move, you see everything, and it's quite... immediate like that.
Yeah, and I think that's fantastic as somebody coming along as well, to know that you are actually doing that there, and then you can hear it, you can see it, and there's just something so important in that you are there performing live. It's not a pre-prepared
I think there is a definite a thing in dance music and DJing and music in general, all music now, that it's a real need to erase mistakes. People will play to a click track and everything is incredibly perfect, and DJs will use everything. So you can't hear any glitches or anything like that. And then to me, it's just a little bit boring. So at Hot Tub, if you come and see, you'll see my sweat go onto the records and I'll mess it up and there'll be something that happens. And I think that gives it the raw energy that makes for a really good gig.
Yeah, I would totally agree. If something goes a little bit slightly awry in any gig, you're like, that DJ's doing that right now. There's so much props for that. Hot Dub is now massive worldwide. It's been a long graph. I think you've mentioned somebody that you've been touring basically since 2012 till the pandemic.
Yeah, it was a gradual from 2012. It was about 2014 when things started to go crazy for me. I was able to quit my job at the end of 2013. I came over and did the Edinburgh Christmas Festival in our summer hall, and I was there for a month. And with the money from that, I was able to quit my job, which was wonderful. I remember there were snowstorms though, and it was amazing. But then 2014, things really took off for me in Australia as well. Like, when I did Hogmanay, and then I got into Festival. I did Tea in the Park and Reading and Leeds and that kind of stuff. And I feel like for a while it seemed like I would have a career in America, but I gave that a go, but I can't be bothered, frankly.
Coachella.
Coachella I did. There was many, many stories about that period of my life. There was a while there where Americans were like, oh my God, we love Hot Dub. You are going to make so much money here. And then it would just amount to absolutely nothing. So I'm very happy to be... I like coming over to the UK. I like playing in Australia. I like doing gigs around Asia. That's the world for me.
Yeah. Well, it's more for us, which is brilliant. But yeah, you mentioned Coachella there, DJ Tomorrowland, Sydney New Year.
The previous New Year's, 20 to 21, I did a live stream, which was incredibly depressing. It's the one night of the year where you want to be making a lot of money. But, frankly, we moved out of that. Yeah, this New Year's, we had a good one. I was in Sydney, but I'd love to come back and do Hogmanay again in Edinburgh. Like, I actually came over as a backpacker in the year 2000 when I was 21 years old and went to the street party my mates and had the best time of my life. So and playing it in 2015 was all time. So hopefully I'll get to do that again sometime.
Mate, you're an honorary Scot. This is, you need to give me the keys to not alone Edinburgh, just the country.
Yeah, man.
It's fantastic. I love this. You just touched on the pandemic, so I'm going to go that way a second. So a lot of DJs and people who work in performance, it was really, really hard. I have a second job in radio. So for me, I had to stop DJing. I personally found, I've got some free time for a couple of minutes. That was great. And then I really missed the buzz. you being you, that being hot dubbing your entire thing, how was it with the pandemic dealing with that?
Yeah, there were some very dark times, but it's like you can't it's hard because you get into comparative grief stuff, because obviously I feel like I'm an incredibly privileged person who have enough money in the bank to weather through it. But it was hard to deal with going from we came off the road. I'd just been in buddy Japan, and we were doing this wine machine tour, which is a festival that I used to be a big part of. And all of a sudden the rug got pulled, and the festival lost a lot of money because no one was buying tickets, and it got cancelled, and it was just a disaster. And so I started doing live streams, which is great. People really liked them. But it kind of just kept on going. I felt like I was just still going on this crazy momentum. I was probably drinking too much. I was drinking too much. And then here in Australia, everyone just kind of went back to the lockdown, and everyone went back to work. And all of a sudden, there's less people watching my stream. And all of a sudden, I was left there going, oh, this is, so that was very, very miserable time towards the end of 2020. But unfortunately, I managed to get out of that, and it's been much better time since then, right?
But you mentioned, if I may just touch on it, fine if you don't want to, but if I may just touch on it, you put a lovely post up on Facebook the other day just talking about, you touched on alcohol there, and you have gone through a journey there, and put a lovely post up saying to people about how you've come through that.
Yeah, I was 500 days of sobriety, which is quite a big deal for me. So it was it used to be that at the start of my show, I'd say there was, you know, five elements of hot dub. They were singing, dancing, yelling woo, chatting up the person next to you, and drinking. And I would get absolutely smashed at every show. And I had a great relationship with alcohol, is what I would tell myself. And because I just loved it, and I was having so much fun, and I was just becoming my job and all that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, as you get older, and I think everyone knows that eventually, if you have that excessive relationship with anything, it's not going to end well. And but yeah, now I've been sober for 500 days, which is a long time, and wow. I love it. I feel really great. I've done a couple of fringes sober, which is a big change for me. I think I did 2018 and 2019 sober as well, but which is very different from my days where I used to turn up to Loft Bar at the top of Gilded Balloon with two Jägermeisters and two pints after each show. See, that just sounds so much more rock and roll, doesn't it? It's way more interesting than talking about having a cup of tea and playing computer games.
I know, but this is the new rock and roll. A bit of self-care is the new rock and roll. Do you know what I mean?
Because... I think it is when you're in your 40s, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. what's been your highlight? Because you've done Tomorrowland, you've done the F1, supported Chaka Khan. I mean, what's been the highlight of any of these gigs?
Yeah, well, it's to pull one out, I would say doing Tea in the Park was a real fun thing. It was something that I really dreamt of as soon as I started getting big festivals like that in Australia, and I started to go, oh, I can do that. Because previously, you know, I used to, in 2012, I was playing to 400 people at Gilded Balloon, and that seemed like a lot. But gradually, I was playing to bigger and bigger crowds, and thought, oh, I can really do this on a big stage. And a new Tea and Park was the Scottish festival, and so I got there on the last year they did it, and they put me in the big top on the opening night, and I think I was pretty much the first act to play. So they gave me like 2.5 hours, and I didn't really know what to expect, and we got there and they were just singing, the crowd were just chanting. There's video on my socials somewhere of it. Just all these kids, these Scottish kids who kind of knew me from the fringe or whatever, were just absolutely going mental. And I started, and everyone rushed into the tent, and it was just an absolutely, it was a great time. I'm so glad I got to do that festival. It was a real, real moment for me.
You also mentioned about how you're Australia, UK, Asia, and you'd done a gig in Japan. Now, when you're in Scotland doing gigs, you're dropping in Proclaimers and insert other Scottish tracks that you're wearing a kilt. I mean, what is Japan wanting versus what we're wanting or Australia wanting? You know, what are those specific to the country songs that you drop in?
Well, to be clear, when I'm in Japan, I'm playing to mainly English and Australian people. Right, okay. And Scottish people, of course. It's the Japanese people. It was at we had a festival there that was an offshoot of Wine Machine that I did in Japan. But yeah, I play in all kinds of places. But yeah, I like it. But what I actually thought that was about is finding the songs that work everywhere. And so, you know, September by Earth, Wind and Fire, it doesn't matter which country you're in, that song is amazing. But I do enjoy finding the little things. Once you get a taste for those local references, like I was in Romania in 2019 doing a terrific festival there. And I was like talking to the guy driving me to the gig. I was like, mate, give me, what's the song? And he was, there's a 90s Euro dance. It's called Dragonoshti. It's a banger. And you would know it. It's like in the kind of LaBouche era. And he was like, that's the one. So I played it and the whole place was going, eh. In Ireland, it's this weird Mark McCain thing that works. In New Zealand, I played because I grew up in New Zealand, there's actually a 90s commercial that is incredibly obscure about polar pop bears that you play and people react to. So I love finding those moments. But the thing about Scotland, I've been there so much, I feel like I always feel like I need to find, you know, some new little... bits for
have
it.
You got a Jerry Cinnamon Belter?
Yeah, of course, mate. I feel like I checking. Did that. I feel like
You're on it already.
Well, I did Belter into it was last time I played there was at Corn Exchange and Lewis Capaldi was such a thing. And it was very playing his song right at the end was just phenomenal. But I feel like I find with Hot Dub, and you might find this as well as a DJ, is that people are so willing to dance to cheesy stuff. Like everyone will dance to Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper a billion times. But if you go to a crowd and in Scotland, all of a sudden they decide they've heard Jerry Cinnamon too many times and it's a bit naff all of a sudden, they'll just draw the line on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So yeah, it's like, they've had enough of that one now. All right,
yeah, okay. Absolutely. Lewis Capaldi. I remember I played Lewis Capaldi and I was just absolutely loving it. What an artist. What an amazing song and things. I had some people just go, oh, I can't believe you're playing that. I'm like, mate, you were dancing to the Proclaimers. Okay. Don't tell me this is overplayed. In Sydney, we're so worried about being cool. And things are instantly uncool incredibly quickly over here.
But this is what's so great about the show. It's about the party. For those who've never been to a Hot Dub Time Machine event, can you describe it?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, Hot Dub Time Machine, we'll start by going back to the birth of rock and roll. We'll do a proper classic Hot Dub at the Fringe this year, which means back to 1954, start with Rock Around the Clock, and then I play songs in order. And that concept on its own might sound pretty boring, but there's something about the momentum of hearing 100 of the greatest songs mixed together and layered and it's that moment when you're in a dance floor and you know the words to a song and you look across and someone else knows the words to that song and the whole room knows the words to that song and it has this kind of whirlwind of enthusiasm and love for music that just creates a joyous, fun, best party ever type vibe. That's my pitch. How's that, mate?
Amazing. Tom, thank you so much for chatting to us. Give me your time late in the evening in Sydney, and we can't wait to see you here in Edinburgh in Scotland.
Yeah, no worries. I really enjoyed it. Great chat.
Thank you very much.